Racetech, racetech.com. Racetech seminars are coming up in Corona, California at the headquarters. This is where many, many people in the industry got their start, learning about suspension, learning the insides and outs of doing suspension, and taught by Paul Thied himself. And so Racetech will give you all the information that Paul has known for decades to help you along, to start you up a suspension service. So please check it out on racetech.com for more information. And if you need a discount on motor work or suspension, tell me you listen to Pulp. All right, on to the show.
A Pulp MX Network production.
Welcome to the Fly Racing Steve Mathis Show, presented by Maxxis Tires, Renthal, and Motorsport.com on RacerXOnline.com. With your continuing gracious support of our sponsors, we're thriving at over 1,800 podcasts delivered with over 20 million downloads. Click the Amazon banner on Pulp MX to help us out. Donate via Patreon if it suits you. And as always, enrich your moto lifestyle by working with the sponsors who support us. The original Moto Podcast, featuring legends of the past, stars of today, season previews, race reviews, introspection, opinion, facts, and laughs. Here's the voice bringing it all to you, Steve Mathis.
Say that dedication to your frustration.
Welcome, everybody, to the Fly Racing Racer X podcast. I want to thanks to folks at Fly Racing for all that they do. And, now we have a code to save with Fly Racing. Pulp MX saves you at flyracing.com. Please check it out. Use the code right on their website. Get a discount. Get a Pulp MX discount. And, check out the Evo gear. Check out the Formula helmet. The Evo Abyss stuff they just released for Vegas SMX with Dino and Hep guys wearing it. Looked really, really good. And, they got lots of cool stuff on flyracing.com. Head to toe, they've got you covered. That Formula helmet's amazing. And, great colors, great company and everything else. Use the code PULPMX to save at flyracing.com. That's new. So thanks to the folks at Fly Racing. And also, thank you to Renthal. Jet Lawrence uses Renthal. He's pretty good. Probably the only reason he wins is because of Renthal, right? Probably. Renthal.com for more information. Really informative website as well. And whether it's 7/8 bar for the vintage stuff, cloth bar pads, they brought those back. Twin wall bar, fat bar, all of that under the Renthal roof. They can help you out with controls. They've got grips as well, chains, sprockets, right? Renthal. Chances are you've used some of their product if you're listening to this. And great company, great products. Also, the mountain bike parts from Renthal are available at power sports dealers around the country now. So that's new for those guys. Renthal.com. And Maxxis Tires, Maxxis.com for more information. Soft, intermediate to hard terrain tires are out now, and they're used by some of the top supercross teams out there. So Maxxis.com, check them out. UTV tires are great. Mountain bike tires are great. And they've employed Jeremy McGrath to help develop them some really cool bitchin' motocross tires, and they do a good job. Fast Freddy Noren's been using them all year, and he likes them, and he's been doing really well. So thanks to the folks at Maxxis Tires for coming on board the show. Check out Maxxis the next time you're in the market for a high-end dirt bike tire, all right? You won't be disappointed. So thank you to the folks at Maxxis, Renthal, Motorsport.com. We'll tell you more about later. But for now, it's Joey Savacci, Davey Coombs. Thanks for listening. All right, first up on the Fly Racing Racer X podcast is the new Fly Rider. Just announced Firepower Honda, World Supercross, AMA Supercross, Australian Supercross, and a friend of the show, Joey Savacci. What's up, Joe Dog?
What's going on, man?
Thanks for doing this. Appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
The news is out. Firepower Honda for all of those series that I just talked about, I guess. And, we know you wanted to do 450 Supercross. That was a big, big thing for you. Triumph couldn't get the 450 ready to go. And we'll talk a little bit about Triumph there in a little bit. But did you know Marty pretty well? Did you know Yariv? Like, how did it all come together, the new deal?
To be honest, it was one of those things where I was trying to figure out what I was going to do next year. Just kind of having conversations in my inner circle, you know, amongst myself, my wife, you know, my family, Zach, and just, you know, people that I talk to and value their opinion on. And it's like, I was kind of at that point, like, dude, what do I do? Because I can't afford, to sit out again all next year, Supercross, and just race outdoor. So it was just like, what the deal was originally supposed to be is not what it ended up being, which sucks for both ends because, Triumph, I truly believe that they wanted to go racing with me and, you know, they had every intention to. It's just I guess you could say it was a live and learn thing, you know, that they learned a lot this year with being rushed with the 250 and, you know, the hoops that they had to jump through to get there. But, you know, like as far as Martin, obviously I've known Martin for, feels like forever. Mm-hmm. When I first got a ride with JDR KTM back in 2013, I lived in California for a few months, I think half a year. And Martin and I were roommates. I've known Martin since I was pretty much like maybe 13, 14. We lived together. We used to golf a lot together. Like, you know, we did a lot together. Mm-hmm. He's a good friend of mine.
Yeah. More than just teammates for years,
Exactly. So, I've known Martin for a long time. And then, Yariv actually, I've known for a long time because when Gavin went to Australia to race for Yariv, I had known Yariv before that because he had been MTF a few times, but I was obviously way more familiar with him because of Gavin and all of that. So yeah, I've known Yariv for a long time. My little one's distracting me, but yeah, I've known both of them for probably 10 plus years. And it, like I said, it was something that wasn't in the books. Like, you know, it literally was a Sunday afternoon or no, it was a Monday. I did a bike ride with Dino and there's me, Zach, and, it got brought up about Christian, Craig, and Zach was like, "Hey, is Christian going there?" And Dean made the comments on about, "Yeah, I don't know if he's taking my ride or not." And then Dean said, "Well, for all I know, you're taking it." And he looked at me and I was like, "Dude, I haven't talked to them in months, I swear." Mm-hmm. Right? And this is like a Monday afternoon. And I told him that I hadn't talked to Martin, I hadn't talked to Firepower in probably months. And he's like, "Yeah, but you told me that about Triumph. You told me you weren't going to ride Triumph and you had no idea and you had already signed a deal." I'm like, "Yeah, dude, but I promise." Dude, I shit you not. Tuesday afternoon, Martin calls me. He's like, "Hey, what do you want to do? Like, do you want to come ride the bike or what?" And I'm like, what's the deal look like? And it's a lot of racing, dude. I'll be honest. It's like 40, I think it's 41, right? 41 races, maybe. If I do Australia, World Supercross, AMA Supercross, AMA Outdoor, and SMX. Mm-hmm. So I was like, "Oh, I don't know, dude. Let me think about it." And they sent an offer over and I'm like, I can't not do it, you know? And so it was literally a span of like 20 hours between when I talked to Dean and didn't. So then, you know, it started happening and I told Martin, I'm like, "Dude, please don't tell Dean. Let me talk to Dean first because I don't want Dean to think that I just straight up lied to his face."
Yeah.
Because it was in a weird spot. But yeah, I mean, as far as how it came together, like literally was a Monday afternoon. I had no intentions of going there. I had no idea. Trying to figure out, you know, like, do I sit around and wait for a fill-in ride? You know, what do I stay down 250? Like, what do I do?
Yep.
And the next day it was like, "Hey, this is an option. Do you want to do it? We need to know kind of soon because we have other people waiting." And yeah, it just happened.
Oh, okay. I was going to ask you if it included nationals, but I was thinking you were going to just do kind of what Dean did, where if you need points to get in SMX, you'll do whatever you need to do, you know?
But yeah, it is. Like, it kind of, they've left that part a little open. I mean,
yeah,
it's for sure. I think we have to do five. And at that point for me, I'm like, "Dude, if you guys are financially capable, like, I would rather just keep racing." I know it's a lot of racing, but where I'm at in my career, and I truly enjoy racing, even though it's not always the most fun and there's struggles. But you know, to miss all of last year like I did, and then to race outdoor and not have it go how I want to, like, there's nothing more satisfying than maybe not having the best weekend or having a good weekend, and then having the option or the availability to do it again the following weekend. You know,
so
I mean, I don't know that necessarily all 11 are mandatory. I think they might be, but you know, five is probably the number that we'll have to do, but I would rather just keep going. 'Cause I know I won't be here racing forever. And, I'm just trying to, trying to enjoy it.
What was the most, obviously, like I said, off the top, 450s, getting to 450s and racing those was important to you, but, AMA Supercross, like, did you want to do World and Aussie and do like a Brayton thing, or AMA Supercross was the number one thing you needed to get back to, and the other races are just part of the deal because obviously it's an Aussie-based team? Or were you like, yeah, let's do them all, because you've done World before. I don't think you've ever done Aussie. So what attracted you as far as series-wise, just American Supercross on a 450?
Yeah. I mean, just having a secure future for, for you know, more than one season. That was kind of big for me. It's, you know, like I said, I still believe that I'm really good on a dirt bike, and I still believe that I can be, you know, I mean, it's a harsh reality, but I still believe I can be a top seven guy. And I know a lot of people might hear that and throw their eyes, say I'm an idiot, but like, dude, I believe I have the qualities to be able to go fast. And, you know, like, it's just, this year was a struggle and I couldn't get off the gate, but you know, like, I was able to show that, hey, I still have speed. And I just was, I just can't afford to not go racing. So obviously to be back in AMA full time, was the ultimate goal. And all this other stuff is rushed, to be honest. Like, I even asked them, hey, can we sit out some of this and just come in on the back half?
Can I have a bit more time?
And they were like, well, it's kind of like an all-in deal. And I'm like, hey, like, as long as you guys understand that it's an all-in deal and I won't have as much time as I want, then like, okay, I'm good with it. You know, like, and obviously Uribe wants to go win Australia and he wants to do well in World Supercross, but you know, his focus is Australia. And, I just, you know, truth be told, I'll have, if I ride 3 days this week, I think I'll have 10 days on the bike. So it's a lot, you know, like I'm aware of that, but as long as I feel like the gate and avoid the carnage, I can kind of ease myself back into it and just keep the expectations realistic. And I think it'll be good for me, you know, to get all of Australian and all of World Supercross to kind of build going into AMA. Like, I don't think it's a bad thing.
How's the Honda? What do you think? It's going to be weird to see you on a red bike, I think, but how is it?
Yeah, I've never ridden a Honda. Yeah. It's been good so far, to be honest. I'm on a 24 right now, and that's kind of a decision that we're going to make when I fly it out there next week. Is I'm supposed to test the 25 and see if that's the direction I want to go. From what I've gathered, like, it's really good cornering. I've enjoyed the bike. I've had a little bit of a hard time adapting to, like, this front tire placement. So, like, you know, if I'm coming into a corner and there's like a rut that's maybe and a half wide, like, I'm just half a tire width one way or the other, and I'm still learning, you know, like, where the tire is on the ground. And they do say some of that is maybe a little bit of flex, which is why I think Jet and those guys, they added some material to the frame up by the head stay, and they say that's supposed to help. And then obviously the 25 I think is
it's quite a bit better.
If I can figure that out, like, I'm comfortable. You know, it didn't take me as long as I thought it would. Definitely the first 2 days I rode, I was like, man, this is tough. But you know, like, it was good and bad, because the first 2 days that I rode, it was SMX up at Colleen's house. And of course, you know, I roll in first day, hadn't ridden in a little while. I hadn't been on a 450 in a minute, and Eli's there, and Jay Coop and Deegan, like, dude, Star Cruise there, and I'm like, for sure, dude, this is what I want.
Yeah, this
to show
is great, right?
Head first. This is the confidence that I need. And it was tough, but you know, like, dude, we were on a Supercross setting on SMX track, and even with dudes who've been on a 450 for years and on the same bike all year, like, they struggled with it because it's a hard balance. And the first couple of days, I was like, man, this is tough. But I've started to be more comfortable and acclimated with the bike. So, I'm excited. And, you know, Martin is excited. You know, they pride themselves on making the rider happy. And,
I was going to ask you, so how'd the phone call go with Dean? the next day?
Well, so it was Dean made a – I actually hadn't talked to him yet because I hadn't signed the contract. But he made a comment or he texted me and was like, how's the bike? And I was like, listen, dude – because he texted me and Zacho in a group chat. And yeah, I was like, listen. I was like, I swear to you, have receipts. I will show you I wasn't lying. And he's like, I'm just messing with you. I'm like, yeah, dude, but I feel bad because I don't want you to think like we're friends, and I don't want you to think that I just stared you straight in the eyes and lied to you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I was like, literally, dude, like it was a Monday recovery ride after the race weekend, and I hadn't even talked to them. And the following day, it looked like it was going to be a done deal. And I was just like, I have receipts, I'll show you. But he's pretty good with it. You know, it's it will be good to be at the races overseas and have him, you know, on my team, and just, you know, he's pretty laid back. I think he keeps the atmosphere in a good place. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking forward to that.
If Triumph gets they released the 450, obviously it's coming up. The media is riding it next month. If they are going 450 racing, are you still there, do you think?
If they had one?
Yeah. Like if they say, hey, we're going 2025 450 Supercross, do you think you're still there?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
And I think that's it, dude. It was such a weird parting ways thing, like how it happened and everything. And I think from both ends, we were kind of in a weird spot. And there's so many things that I want to say, but you know, like what I want people to understand is that I have nothing but respect for them. Like we left on good terms. Like
yeah,
you know,
I want people to know too. I tried to stir it up when the Triumph 450 got debuted, and you were having none of that privately. You were having none of that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like, dude, truth be told, like they did a really good job with the 250, and maybe me being too up in my ego or whatever you want to call it, but like I just truly thought that, hey, like we might be at a disadvantage, but I'm good enough to overcome it during outdoor. And it just wasn't the case, dude. Star, Cowie, like Honda, they have their bikes so figured out right now that you can't afford to be behind those guys by so many positions at the start of the race and expect to move forward. There's just too many, you know, there's too many good kids that are close enough in speed. Mm-hmm. And, but like, dude, the motorcycle itself handled amazing. Mm-hmm. Like I'm telling you, there was maybe one moto all year where I was like, hey, bike wasn't the greatest, it was doing this, but dude, every time I came in, whether it was qualifying or racing, I'm like, dude, mm-hmm. like suspension and chassis wasn't the reason we didn't do good. And we left on good terms. And like, dude, I told Ian over in England, mm-hmm. you know, pretty really high up at Triumph, I told him, like I FaceTimed him, we were talking about it. I'm like, dude, if you guys ever, you know, and we get to that point in the road where you guys have a 450 and you guys are searching for a 450 guy, like, you know, I would be honored, and I hope that you guys will consider me. Mm-hmm. You know, and like he said, if the cards are right and it makes sense, then you know they're not opposed to it by any means. And I just think people kind of were unsure on how to take that. Like maybe we left on bad terms, but you know, I have nothing but good to say about them. And mm-hmm. you know, Scuba, you know, is as much of a pain in the butt as he can be. You know, he did a good job also, and it's just it was tough.
Yeah, like so. How much of it, though, too? And this is something that I've often thought, and I'm not always right, Joey, as you know. But I just think it's so hard for 450 riders to adapt to a 250 mindset / riding style. It's happened time and time again. I mean, we just saw Kenny at Ironman. Now Kenny was a bit sick too, so it's not fully like his ninth that he got wasn't a fully thing because he wasn't feeling well and it was really hot. But it's just a different mentality, an older guy dropping to 250s. How much of it was just that? Like you underestimated that mentality, that mindset, that aggressiveness you need in that class?
To be honest, I was scared to death going into round one because I was like, dude, what if I don't have the speed? Like, mm-hmm. and like, what if these kids are just sending it to the point where I'm just like 3 seconds live off the pace? You know, like you can ask Zach, dude, like, I stressed for the last month coming into round one, like, dude, what am I going to do if I'm just not fast enough? You know, like it would be one thing, like if I had the speed and like, let's say as it turned out, I can't get off the gate. That's frustrating. But like, I was just so scared that, and I say scared, just like my fear was, hey, I'm able to get off the gate every weekend, top five. And these guys are just blowing my doors off and there's nothing I can do about it. Because for me, like, that is the hardest part of racing. If there's a bridge you can't cross or you can't bridge that gap and you're just stuck, it sucks.
Yeah.
And, you know, truth be told, I don't know if I never even got away. The only race that I got away halfway decent, and it was by luck of the straw or however you want to say it, was Southwick. And Southwick is my worst track all year. And that was my best finish all year, even with a tip over in the last lap. I even got fifth overall. But it was like every other round outside of that, I don't even know if we ever crossed, you know, like, so I,
you broke up there a little bit. You don't know if you, what crossed the line?
I don't know if I ever crossed the start hole shot line inside like the top nine.
Yeah.
And so, you know, truth be told, if I got a hole shot one race, I don't know that I wouldn't have been able to go with the guys when they got to me. And if Deegan or one of those guys passed me, like, I truly would have latched on and gone with them. But, you know, as they say, talk is cheap, and I'm not going to sit here and say it's doable, but
yeah,
it wasn't, you know, it wasn't in my mind. I never even got a real grasp of like, this is where it's at, because I was just in, as Zach says, I was in the worst spot to be in, because I'm in that 10th to 15th range on the first lap, and you're around guys that are good enough to be very hard to pass. And when you have Deegan and Hymus and Kitchen and, you know, these guys who get away inside the top five on the first lap, good luck. They're gone.
Yeah. Yeah, you're not getting them.
You're not getting them. And yeah, so I don't know. I do think it is hard. Like, yep, it was something that I struggled with for probably a month and a half, 2 months, and probably still did even at the end. It's just, it's a totally different way to ride. And when you've come up your whole life, you raced the 250 for all those years, and you rode it and win races, and you know how to ride it. And then when you step away from it with the mindset of I'm never coming back, it's really hard to step back in and relearn some of those habits that you tried to wash away. And yeah, I mean, I never got off the gate good enough to go and get away with those guys to see like, man, these guys in the opening lap are unreal, or it's one of those things I couldn't tell you. But I can tell you this, that, dude, the kids are good. Deegan's good. Like, there's not much you can say about it.
There was some to me, like, I'm like, oh man, he hasn't raced for a long time, but he does have the jump on these dudes outdoor wise. And then Apollo, you qualified second, almost first, you know, Cochran got you on the last lap. And then you got,
second. Cochran got me at Hangtown.
Hangtown. That was it. Sorry. Yeah. And then you get fifth in a moto at Paula, and the second moto, you know, you go down and you come from way back.
Yep.
And at that point I'm like, okay, like, he's good. He's got this, you know, not to win the title or anything. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm not trying to like besmirch your name, but I didn't have you for titles, I'm like, hey, podiums and top fives. I think he's there. And then, just kind of your bike broke at Hangtown, different things.
It's one of those things that I truly believe that there's things happen for a reason for sure. But I also believe heavily that, when the pendulum is swinging in your direction, you ride the wave. And, you know, like you look at Deegan all year, like, dude, it looked like the dude could do nothing wrong.
Yep.
And on the other hand, like, I truly believe that my opportunity was the first three rounds. I needed to get off the gate. I needed to have good races early to kind of learn the pace and be up front. And I wasn't really able to do that. And, you know, from there, everybody got more committed with outdoor. I'm sure they figured their bike setups better, and they just got better. So yeah, like, my opportunity, and that was the game plan from the beginning. It's like, hey, come out swinging. We have a bunch of time under our belt. I know we haven't been racing, but I'm comfortable on the bike. If we can get off the gate and put ourselves up front, I think we can do damage early, and that will give me time to get race acclimated. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's just, unfortunately, never happened.
Yep. No, absolutely. Like you said, it wasn't for a lack of trying by anybody, yourself or the team or anybody else. You know, and also too, I think Triumph got an eye opening on heat and mud and sand and temperature and bikes and nationals. And I think they should still be praised. I mean, it's a fucking brand new motorcycle. They won a heat race, and they got on the podium and things like that. But at the end of the day, outdoors are hard for everyone, you know.
I agree.
How much was it to Jalik? Had a good year, solid year. How much was that like frustrating you too? And not because you didn't get along with him or anything like that, but just like, you know, everybody wants to be the top guy on the team, and Jalik was outperforming you for different reasons most weekends, and you're just like, oh, fuck my life. I mean,
yeah, I mean, for sure, I just was, fuck, dude, every weekend come and beat my head off a wall.
Yeah, yeah.
But like at the same time, like, I was happy for the team. And like mm-hmm. I said earlier, like considering that they're starting with nothing from the ground up, like mm-hmm. I thought that it was good. Obviously for me, I wanted much more, and my goals and expectations were higher, but yeah, I mean, dude, like you look at Jalik, I know I've been on 250, look at Jalik in the years past and myself, like, dude, we're really good starters.
Mm-hmm.
And for whatever reason, like we struggled all year. You know, Jalik every once in a while was able to get a good start, and but like we weren't able to do it consistently, and I believe that's kind of what made it tough for us.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, obviously you never want to be the guy who's getting beat by your teammate, but I would say majority of the time I was starting behind him.
Mm-hmm.
And having to work my way forward. But yeah, I mean, like I said, being yeah. not being number one on the team is always, you know, it's, you feel a little bit of defeat mm-hmm. in a way when you're not the A guy. So
no. Yeah, for sure. That is absolutely true. Right. And you've been number one guy on teams for years.
Yeah,
so
it's, and again, it's one of those things that like, I believe in my ability to be the number one guy.
Yeah.
And yeah, so yeah. It was tough. Like I said, it was a lot, but I tried.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, like, and that's, you know, like at the end of the season, it's kind of like debrief, you know,
yeah.
My trainer, Ryan and Zach, like, we all sat down and I'm like, dude, listen, at the end of the day, like if you had told me this out of the season would have gone right before the season started, I'd be devastated. But you know, had the off season not gone great and I was being lazy and I wasn't doing the work, cause I just was like, oh, I'm going to beat these guys.
Yeah.
Then I'd say, yeah, that's what I deserve. But dude, like I busted my ass and I tried to fix things that needed to be fixed. And,
yeah.
You know, like my results had nothing to do with from my effort of, or my level yeah. of effort, you know, like I tried and it just sucks.
Yeah. I think Scuba and me talking to Scuba all summer, same thing. Those guys were like, it's not going well, it's not working, but he's a good guy. We're working hard. We're trying to figure it out. You know what I mean? Like there was no F this guy from the Triumph dudes when I talked to him, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I hope it's not like that, you know, because it's like I said, I bonded well with everybody. Like even my first trip to England and when the guys came over from England, like I always got along with them. We were always, it was nice that we could be pretty straightforward with everything and, you know, how everyone felt. And yeah, mm-hmm. just like I said, it wasn't from a lack of effort. And I know that. And I think that the team knows that also because, they saw how many hours I put in and how many engines we were, you know, going through and mm-hmm. all the stuff that we were trying to do. So yeah.
Firepower Honda's Joey Savacci here, Fly Racing RacerX podcast. How is the Fly Racing gear? You wore Fly before?
Yeah, I wore it when I filled in for AC in 22?
Yeah, that's right. I was going to say Cowie.
Yeah, dog.
Also, have you been to Australia before? Are you looking forward to settling down there? Is the family going with you? Like, how much?
No, I'll be solo.
Oh,
it's tough. Yeah, I'm in my fields this last week or so because
no,
I don't. I'm not normally away from my kids or my wife for very long. And
it's a beautiful country, though. You might.
Yeah, I've been to Australia a few times.
Oh, okay.
But yeah.
Okay. Also, man, awesome, I should say. Thank you for this quick little check-in. Appreciate it, Firepower Honda. Good luck with everything, man. I'm sure I'll be texting with you and all that. I'm going to go to Vancouver, so I'll see you there.
Is the real media guy going too, or no, just you?
Who's that?
You know, the other half of you.
The other half of me. Wygant?
Nope. The English.
Oh, Lewis?
Yeah.
No, we don't like
Sorry, you. Is that a soft spot?
Yeah.
Too soon?
Yeah, Sorry. Too soon, man. Too soon.
Sorry.
No, I don't know if he's going, actually, to be honest. I'm thinking if he is.
Are you flying in early or are you a last minute guy?
I'm going in early. I'm going to do some mountain biking.
Ooh.
It's great up there.
Or
what's that?
Are you going by yourself?
I got a buddy of mine that rides up there all the time. He's taking me. You want me to get you a bike?
No, you yelled at me for cycling Friday before Wash Ugle. So.
Oh yeah, that's right.
I don't want to cycle.
Well, hey man, good luck with this. I appreciate the time for sure. And it should be exciting to see you on Honda and see what you can do on that. And you'll have some air miles points come Anaheim. You'll be ready.
Yeah, you're not lying. I'll be ready.
Yeah.
I'll be airline seasoned.
Awesome. Thanks, Joe Dog. Appreciate it, man. And talk soon, man. See ya.
All right. Thanks. See you. Bye.
Thanks for Joey Savacci for doing that. Fly Racing Racer X podcast. Thanks to the folks at Motorsport, motorsport.com. Go through the banner on Pulp Mex to help us out. And make us purchase. That way we get a small slice. Great prices, great shipping, great dedicated team of gearheads there to help you out. And whether it's Fly or Renthal or Maxxis, whatever, the guys at motorsport.com have got it going on. They got great prices. They got e-bike stuff, street bike stuff, all of that. It's the number one online ordering place in our industry, motorsport.com. They support the sport through the Nationals as well. So thank you to those guys for all that they do. Check them out. Use the banner and support the Pulp Mex shows. All right. We heard Joey Savacci about his new ride. Now let's talk to Davey Coombs about some personal MXDN highlights. Away we go. All right, everybody. As promised, next up on the Fly Racing Racerx podcast with the Motocross the Nations coming up next weekend in Matterley Basin. Guy on the line that has maybe been to the most that I know of besides Roger DeCoster. It's Davey Coombs from RacerX. What's up, DC?
Hey, Steve. How's it going?
Good. Thank you for doing this. And yeah, you've been going to this thing for a long time as an editor of Cycle News, probably, or Dirt Bike, or Dirt Rider, I should say. What's the first MXDN you went to?
Well, I've been a fan of them ever since I was a little kid, and I remember watching one on TV, and I've never been able to find it, but it was the 74 race from Sweden. It was the, I think it was the Trophy Nations, and Team USA got second, and ever since then, I was just infatuated by it. But to physically get to go myself, believe it or not, I missed 1987 at Unadilla because I was still in college.
Oh, okay. And, yeah.
Finally in 1993, I went to Schwanstad, Austria.
That was McGrath, Emig,
and Kudrowski.
Kudrowski, yeah.
Yeah, and it was crazy because it was the first time I really got to meet Kurt Nicole, and he was just not happy that this supercrosser, this Jeremy guy, had been picked for Team USA. He actually, I remember, he was like, why is Jeff Stanton not here? Like, well, he's not really the same Jeff Stanton.
Yeah.
But this kid's pretty good. But I admitted I'd never seen him ride a 250 before.
Yeah, you know, he'd ridden a 125.
Yeah, he rode a 125 outdoors all year. And, of course, by then he was the AMA Supercross champion in the premier class, but he acquitted himself well, and we eked it out because at the last minute Kudrowski passed a few guys, and that at that point we were at 13 in a row.
Yeah, lots to talk about when it comes to this race for sure, and you know, America obviously had that winless drought going on for a long time, but as I said on a few shows, and you know this well too, like, America also got a lot of breaks, and they squeaked a few out that probably they shouldn't have over the years. Puzar got stuck in the Parc Fermé 1 year, and of course Jeff Stanton put on a couple of heroic rides to get the win on the last few laps. And so, like, America, as much as things have gone south lately, although they did win the other year, they also snuck some few out, didn't they?
Yeah, and you know what? It's funny you would mention guys getting stuck in the Parc Fermé. That was Alessandro Puzar, and it was in Schwanenstad, and the team manager or the team benefactor for Italy that year was Franco Acerbis, and I went to interview him after the race because they'd blown it, you know. Yeah. Puzar, Bartolini, I mean, they had a great team, and but they wouldn't let Puzar ride the second moto, and he goes, I have 50 people on this team and nobody wear a freaking watch.
so you were there for Cycle News. I was going to ask you, Cycle News, do you think?
Yeah, I was there for Cycle News.
Okay.
And then I had the dubious honor of also being the Cycle News guy the next year, which was in Roggenberg, Switzerland. And that was the end of the streak. And, you know, not any real bad breaks. England just wrote about a race, especially Paul Malin. He was fantastic. And every time I see Paul, you talk about that. And then every time you know, Paul sees Jeff Emig. Emig looks at him and says, "I have no idea who you are." And then he spins him around and looks at his back. He goes, "Oh, Paul Mela. No, never seen you from the front."
Yeah. The word is that he got Bobby Moore's bike that day, right? From Chesterfield Yamaha. It was the factory bike or something, right?
It was amazing. Those 125 Yamahas back then, the Chesterfield Yamahas were amazing. And but it was a real weird track, and the other takeaway from that race was the fact that Greg Albertine was winning the first moto, and going down this hill, it had to be going 60 miles an hour, a deer jumped over the fence. and I mean, think about how crazy that is. A guy winning the Motocross of Nations hits a deer.
Yeah.
And that was it for South Africa.
So did you go 95, 96, 97? Like, did you string together?
I 95 was in Slovakia.
Yeah.
And that was Fro and Lamy and
Dowd, I think?
Rhino, yeah.
Oh, Rhino? Sorry, okay.
Yeah, Rhino volunteered to ride the 500. And you know what? We might have won that one if not for Kurt Nicole crashed in front of Rhino going up over this hill. Rhino, you know, it was a blind situation. Mm-hmm. Rhino landed on Kurt's bike, and that was that. It was also the race where Emig was battling with Joel Smets on this big Husaberg, and he ended up beating him. And then when I interviewed him, he said, "Hey, we're Americans. We don't get beat by four strokes." That would, of course, come back to haunt us all. And then 96 was Jerez.
Yeah.
And that was in Spain. It was really weird because it was like on the infield of this F1 track or MotoGP track. And, you know, Jeremy McGrath was pissed because, you know, people were mad that he hadn't gone the year before or the year before that, just that one year in 93. So he went there and, man, he lowered the boom on everyone. And it was maybe the best I ever saw Jeremy ride outdoors. It was just dominant. And you know, Fro volunteered to ride the big KX500. He did fine.
Same bike, right? Course, they dusted the same bike off for years, apparently.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. the old workhorse.
Yeah.
People forget that Steve Lampson that day became the first rider on a true 125 to win a moto of the Motocross Nations outright, because we all talk about Johnny O'Mara in 86, but he actually beat RJ in one moto and David Bailey in the other. But yeah, he beat everyone else. But Lampson gets the nod. And to me, it's still a shame that Steve Lampson's not in the AMA Motorcycle Hall of Fame. Just my editorial.
Yeah. Yeah, they dominated that year. And didn't also Tortelli kind of broke out too, right? That was a year for Tortelli to break out on a Cowie, I think.
Actually, Sebastian, he had done fantastic in 95, and he was only, I think he was only 15 years old or just turned 16 in Slovakia. He ends up beating Lamy and Stefan Everts, who dropped down to the 125. Man, he beat him straight up both motos. And, and I was like, wow, I could make. Was wearing this Oxbow gear, and Lampson said, "Man, I just got beat by a kid wearing pajamas."
Yeah, exactly. It's one of the things that Dead Nations is always good for, not knowing who the hell some of these dudes are, you know?
Yeah, it's like going to Loretta Lynn's and riding the vet class. You know, I tell people like Berner and Robbie Rayner and them, like, you're going to get beat by someone you've never heard of. It's going to be muddy one day, and it's going to be hot one day. Just give with me after the motos.
97 was a loss, right? I think, if I remember right.
Yeah, 97 was in a place called Nîmes, Belgium.
Yes.
And honestly, it was one of the worst days that we've had. And you have to remember, Emma, you know, was the Supercross and Motocross champ, but he was starting to, you know, get a little sideways his career, you know, for a variety of reasons, but mostly I just think he a little bit, and you know, the Jeremy rivalry and outdoing one another, and he didn't show up with his best stuff in Belgium. And the other two guys on the team were Lamy, who was on the 125 again, and John Dowd. And man, we just got worked.
Wasn't there a little bit about the track watering too going on back
then? They they wanted the track so much that they made it a mud race. Because at that point, everyone thought that would be our Achilles heel.
Yeah.
And the Belgians wanted to win at home really bad. And we walk out on the track walk the morning of the race, and there's this French guy standing there, or not French guy, Belgian guy, standing there with big bushy mustache, cigarette hanging out of his mouth, and he's just building a mud hole in this corner, just standing there. And Roger walks up to him, he's like, you know, talks to him in Flemish or whatever, and basically says, "What are you doing?"
Yeah.
And the guy said, "I'm getting it ready." And so we were kind of doomed for that one. And then it did, in fact, actually rain in 98. And that was in Fox Hill, which I think you've been to.
I just came back. Yeah, last month I was there. Yeah. And seeing those, they pointed out which hill they had to cut out. And then they pointed out which hill that only Everett's could make up, you know, in the mud.
And it was incredible. And, you know, what's funny about that one is that one also had a bit of history in it, because the first moto at the very end, the Spanish guy, you know, Garcia Vica, was winning the thing outright. It was going to be, you know, the first time a Spaniard had ever won a moto, and he gets stuck on that hill. And Doug Henry, of all people, motors by and becomes the first four-stroke of the modern era to win a moto, which was, you know, kind of a little thing, because the next couple of motos were just a disaster. But the one thing is, Ricky gets, you know, Ricky joins the picture at this point. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of pressure on him, but the rain, it was a throwaway. But he would have gotten, I think, second or third had they not red flagged that middle moto. Because he was doing fine. And I think only Chiodi was beating him.
Yeah, if you think about a mud race and we're sending John Dowd and Doug Henry, I'm thinking we're good. We're good.
But all of those guys over there are good.
Yeah.
And you know, the chalkiness and the steepness of everything at Fox Hills, it just made it like a skating rink. The bottoms had mud. The hills were, you know, glistening. Mm-hmm. And our guys were just, and Stephen Everts, you know, if he didn't lap the whole field, he came very, very close.
Now, when you're doing this, you know, you're going for, at this point, you're going for Racer X, but then you were going for Cycle News earlier and all this. You're seeing more USA losses than wins. How are you treating this as a reporter? Like, you follow European motocross. You know, at this point, you and Stefan are buddies. So how are you following this?
I became friends with some of the guys at DBR in England, like Mark Greenoff and Eddie Brooks and, of course, the great Jack Bernacle. And then pretty soon, you know, I was such a fan that I started learning to read in French. I'd taken French in high school, and then also, you know, in summer school during college, and I could read it pretty well. So I wrote a letter to Xavier Edouard, and I told him I wanted to write for Motovert and MX Magazine, and pretty soon I was contributing over there too. They never treated me, or really any American, like the ugly American.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But boy, they bask in our defeats, especially my buddy Jeff Meyer, the guy we call MX Jeff from MX Large. He is a complete MXGP file. He loves moto and loves to you know, get in the middle of a good U.S. versus MXGP debate. He can be a bit much at times, but I love the guy, and he's been contributing back and forth. I've contributed to him for 30 years now.
Yeah. Did you go to Brazil in 99?
I did not. So Eric Johnson went to that one instead, and I can't remember why. I've never actually been to South America.
So your streak ended in 99 and Brazil.
Yeah, the streak ended in 99, but then came back with a vengeance in 2000, and so did Ricky.
Yeah.
And this was the race in Saint-Jean-d'Angely where Ricky sort of reestablishes the world order. He wins. This is the race where Pastrana literally jumped over the head of Stefan Roncada.
Yeah.
Depending on where you were standing, but it sure looked like it to me, but I've seen photos where he was beside him.
Mm-hmm.
But just, it was crazy because, you know, Travis was 16. He was remarkable on a 125. And this was like the last time he really got to race when he wasn't hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a great battle between him and Roncada and Grant Langston. And it was the first time I met GL.
Yeah.
And actually seeing him about coming to America.
2001, of course, America doesn't go. Team's picked, but doesn't end up going. And 2002, Spain.
No, 2002 was Competition Park.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Was supposed to be out in.
We did the World Cup.
Sedoba.
That's right. The 2002 one was just thrown together at the last minute. Really?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
I think the French one, but I didn't go. But,
no,
but,
Italy. Says Italy won. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, yes, but the World Cup, Australia beat us in the World Cup. That was my first race for Red Dog at Yamaha back then. Mm-hmm. And Canada got third at the World Cup. No one remembers, but we got third.
nice.
And then 2003, Zolder. I was on the real team with Timmy that year, and I know you were there because I talked to you there.
One
moto
really
format.
That was the classic Ricky versus Stefan.
Yes.
And, you know, I for my dollar, Ricky is the greatest of all time, you know, but Stefan was close. And Stefan was a pure motocrosser. But on that day, on that track, it was pretty even, but the problem was that the whole nation of Belgium was kind of on Stefan's shoulders. You know, the king was there. He was on every TV show. You know, I know from, you know, sort of promoting that, a home race is a lot more difficult than people think. Yeah, you get to sleep in your own bed, but everyone wants to call you. Everyone wants a ticket. Everyone wants you to do publicity, to do media, to be at this party. And that's what was going on with Stefan. So it really wasn't they came differently, I'd say. Ricky was still on the 250. Stefan was on the four stroke. But, you know, and it was one moto, which was just stupid.
I know. I don't know why. The only year they did it, the year I was on the team, it was one moto, and we were done, and the whole thing was over, and all that work.
This is when Dorna owned MXGP and the Motocross of Nations, and they wanted like that, MotoGP style 45-minute show, and just one and done.
Yeah,
they didn't want to make it complicated, but it was a long way to go for one moto, and Rhino's chain popped, and Timmy broke his thumb. And
yeah.
It was just bad. But.
I remember, so I was on, we got second, and like, whatever, like, Ricky rode amazing, and then Rhino's chain, that was the throwaway score, Timmy got eighth or something with that thumb, like you mentioned, and I remember being like, well, we got second, I mean, it is what it is, and Dan Bentley, Eric Kehoe, Ricky, they were so mad, no one was talking in the pits. And I was like, I don't know, man. We just got second. Like, you know, what are you going to do? A guy broke a chain. Another guy broke his stuff. And, dude, no one wanted to hear it. Like, I was like, okay, I guess I'll just be quiet because, like, you know, what are you going to do? But the anger, like, it was win or bust, sorry. Right? It was win or bust. So that's the way it was.
Yeah. And by this point, it had become anybody against the Americans.
Yeah.
And other teams were starting to get depth. We didn't go in 04, but 05 was the beginning of the next great era. And this was back in France. This time it was at Erne.
Yeah.
And Ricky was charged completely. Kevin Windham came and did a good job and kind of got to, he did so bad in Spain or in Brazil. In 1999 that he got to redeem himself. That's the word I was looking for with that win. And then Tedesco was there for the first time. And, you know, Ivan had a sneaky good MXON career.
He did. Yeah, he did. Filled in one time, last minute fill in.
In 05, Alessi was supposed to go. But then after the fiasco at the last moto, Glen Helen, I think that the AMA told him, you're not going. And he got Ivan instead.
Yep.
And, you know, Ivan had won the championship anyway. But and then 06 is Matterly Basin.
Mm-hmm.
And That one was supposed to be the big last time ever, Ricky versus Stefan. And, of course, Ricky DNFs both motos for the one and only time of his career at Glen Helen, because he crashed when he was dicing with James Stewart, separated his shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
So he's and the fill-in is Ivan, he shipped the Suzuki. And Ivan was, you know, on Ricky's teammate by this point.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, probably the second or third greatest ride in the history of the nations that, you know, at least in this lifetime, was Everts when he took it to Jane.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, it was the ultimate walk-off last time around, because he literally quit. And after the motos, Team USA was having a big party. It was hilarious. We're in the Alpenstar truck, and mm-hmm. everyone's, you know, drinking, and all of a sudden Everts shows up, you know, and he's just in his little lorry in the back of the pits. And, you know, I visited with him a couple of times, but mm-hmm. he walked in, and Ricky and Emig are there as fans, you know, to support the team, and everyone sees him, and just everyone stands up and starts applauding.
Oh, that's cool.
It was
yeah.
a really cool moment. Just a complete standing ovation for the king of motocross. And that was one of my favorite memories.
There were some great after parties at the Alpine Star Hospitality over the years, wasn't there?
and there was also some, like, let's get the hell out of Germany parties, too.
Yeah, there's some of that, too. I went in 07 Bud's Creek. That was my first year going, other than being on the team in 03. And then my streak went until 2021 with the COVID thing. So my last one was Assen in 19. So I went to all of the other ones. Most of them USA losses, right? Once they started turning around, France had some remarkable yeah. wins, man. France had some rides. I mean, they pulled an enduro guy, you know, and won Matterly in the mud. And, yeah, they dropped. They didn't even have Marvin on the team 1 year, and they won.
Yeah. So it was a crazy. They never had the same team twice.
No. Yeah.
And just did they were doing what we were doing from, you know, 2005 yeah. to 2011, where we couldn't lose for winning.
Yeah.
And the French were like that. But I will give the French a lot of credit. They take it really serious.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't want to get into any, you know, of the deep water controversial whatever, but the one thing that other countries have been doing more and more is they get a person who is not a domestic team manager
mm-hmm.
to run the team. It's somebody that is completely removed, you know, from the weekend to weekend racing and competition and all that. And, you know, I am one of those people who think that there are times when I wish that we had, you know, a Brock Glover or a Ricky Carmichael, although Ricky's with Triumph now, so, you know, it's kind of the same. But with Roger being with KTM, it's no secret that, you know, there's you know,
yeah.
some people don't really feel comfortable working with him. And that has changed, because he's the greatest manager any country has ever had. But he is from a different era when things mm-hmm. were a little more, there was a little more camaraderie, a little more nationalism,
yeah.
a little more cooperation. And that's where the French, you know, they get Gauthier Paulin. Before that, they had that other guy, I think his name is Eric. Not Bernard, but a gentleman.
Yeah.
But the point is, they have someone who is, like, thinking about that event year
and
long.
They have a little bit of training camp beforehand.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. The guy, even before Gauthier came, or when Gauthier was still racing,
mm-hmm.
The race was coming to Red Bud in 2018, and the guy bought a ticket and showed up, and we got him a press credential, and he was there to scout things out. He was doing dry runs to the hotel. He was he was like you at he was like you at Southwick. He was putting sand in a jar,
taking it back home,
just in case that really was the last one.
Yeah.
Anyway, but yeah, and this is not a knock on Roger. It's just,
yeah.
you know, with us, it's kind of an afterthought because we have such a long season. I know it's tough. Man, we got lucky this year with, you know, with first Cooper Webb, and then of course, Eli Tomac, you know, raising their hand saying, let's go. I don't know what happened to this, you know, the Star Racing. Yeah, we don't want to support that race too. Yeah, we got three guys.
We're in. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But,
yeah.
But people, you know, Team USA, and I don't know how it is for Canada because you have such a shorter season up there, but it doesn't really get thought of until the end. And this year there was a lot of like, well, is he or isn't he? Is Eli going to be healthy? Is Hayden going to be our 250 guy? It was really late coming together. And I give Mike Pelletier from the AMA and, of course, Roger a lot of credit for getting us to this point. But it seems like we should have more people wanting to go.
It does, right? Yeah, I agree.
Year.
I agree.
And you know what? I think the last guy, Steve, the dogs are barking again.
Yeah.
You would have to go back to Jeff Emig to have a guy that was, you know, in the conversation every year that went every time he was asked. From 92 to 98, Jeff went every single year. And that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So you mentioned Stefan Everts at Matterley as the second best motocross the nation's ride maybe in history or the ones that you've seen. Do we just default to Villopoto or do you have another one?
I do.
Yeah, okay.
That was the craziest performance I think I've ever seen, because this was young Ryan Villopoto. We didn't know what he was capable of. No one, I think, had him down as a all-time great, as a soon-to-be four-time 450 Supercross champ. But he just laid the wood at Butts Creek that day.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and it was funny because, you know, we hadn't had the event in America for 20 years. And so there was a lot of anticipation. And it was Ricky's last race. No one knew that Ricky was sick, that he was dealing with some stomach issues and all. No one had Ryan Villopoto dominating by 30 seconds, both motos and the Saturday qualifier. It was incredible. And I did not get to see what Johnny O'Mara did in 86, but I imagine that would be right there with Stefan in 06.
A couple things about Villopoto. One, I give him shit all the time because he got the inside gate for both motos, which doesn't always happen. And he said it doesn't matter. And then two, he likes to tell me that he is 6-0 as team member of Team USA because he counts the three big bike wins, but he also counts two Pit Bike of Nations at Red Bud, and he counts that he won at Fox Hill for Team USA 3 years ago, and he's never lost, and he likes to tell me how he's 6-0 for Team USA. And I'm like, Ryan, I don't know if the pit bike races count that much, but he does like to tell me about that. So,
he's Ryan Villopoto. He is one of the – he's on our Mount Rushmore, so – yeah, if he wants to count pit bike wins, by God, he's 6-0.
Okay, all right. So when you look back at your Disnations thing, your trips, and your you've been to most of these things, what event stands out? Not for the results, just, I mean, for me, like the first time I went to Erne, and France had a great day, and America had a great day, and they basically beat third place by like 20 points, but France took the win. I had my breath taken away at Erne, you know, standing on the hillside of the opposite side of the crowd and seeing the air horns and the smoke. And I'm like, holy shit. Like, so Erne comes to mind for me as just like, this is unbelievable. But is there something for you?
Well, that Erne one was incredible because I remember as well. And I did a podcast back at Red Bud in 2022 with Dave Prater and David Luongo, the three Daves. And we all three talked about Erne and just the energy and, you know, the whole deal with Ricky and, you know, the French being so up to win and Ricky just, you know, doing his thing. But the one that really, really stands out for me personally, and I think it was the biggest crowd I ever saw at an outdoor motocross race, was Brescia in Italy. And that was in 2009.
Yep.
And it was Jake Weimer on the 250, Ivan, and Ryan Dungey. And Dungey had stepped up to ride the 450 because I think he was the 250 outdoor champ that year.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So it was, you know, one of those, great moments where someone did something exceptionally unselfish, which we've now seen Cooper Webb do twice,
yep.
which is to ride out of class. Wardy used to do it when they needed a 125 rider.
Yeah.
And I think Bradshaw did it 1 year, but Cooper's done it twice now. But anyway, I think there was an honest to God 60,000 people there. It was in this giant, mm-hmm. you know, F1 facility. It was the only time they ever had a race there. And it was Chad Reed versus, you know, Tony Cairoli. But they battled in the first moto, and then they both crashed off the start in the second moto.
Yeah.
And that was it. And opened the door for RD. And I don't think anyone in Europe even knew who Ryan Dungey was.
Yeah, really,
and,
right?
And all of a sudden, he's winning. And then that party afterwards, I do remember Mrs. Dungey trying limoncello for the first time. I'm going to guess for the last time.
I didn't hang out that one, I guess. I left. I don't remember that party, but there were some epic ones.
It was unexpected, and fortunately, we were in Italy,
yeah.
So there was plenty of alcohol to be found.
We, Bud's Creek after party in the hospitality area there, Wygan and I cornered the late Eric Gabors, and we had a few drinks in us, and there's a photo. Somebody got a photo of us, and we are yelling in his face. He looks scared. And we are like, you are Mr. 875. You did it. You're the baddest dude ever. Eric looks like he does not want to talk to us. So Wygan and I were very impressed to meet Eric Gabors. I do remember that. And there was one where Jimmy Albertson, the limoncello got a hold of him also when he was Puerto Rico or Guam or who knows. And Jimmy had a rough night. He had to be rescued, I think, from the limoncello.
So. Well, I do have one more, and it's a personal note. What was my favorite trip, I want to say. I took my mom to the German one in 2012.
13, Torschenthal, yeah.
Yeah, in Torschenthal.
Yep.
And but right before I left, and she wanted to go because she's a big history buff, and I was dying to see Berlin and check out all, you know, what was left, what happened.
Yeah.
And right before we left, I'd written about it in Racerhead, and I get a anonymous or just random email from a guy, I think his name was Scott Dixon. He was from Canada, but he was living in Berlin, and he's a Lutheran scholar. He studies Martin Luther half the year in and around Germany, and then he teaches at the American University in Ireland. So really neat guy, but he was like, look, I know you said you're only in Berlin for a couple of days. Uh-huh. I would love to show you and your mom around. I tell you what, if you don't mind the occasional motocross question, because I'm dying to know, I'll give you guys a tour. And I was like, okay, sure.
That is such a you thing to do. You would,
And he took us on this, I want to say, secret tour of Berlin, and he showed us, you know, down where the bunker was, and where the, you know, what is ostensibly the Tomb of the Unknowns, because there's not a lot of German graveyards or monuments, or I should say Nazi or Wehrmacht, especially in Berlin, because it was, you know, divided up afterwards, and you know, the Soviet side is where a lot of the fighting was. And so anyway, I am a history dork, as you know, and that was a really special trip because we didn't win. But my mom and I had an absolutely wonderful time, thanks to Scott Dixon.
Did you do the German resistance thing, like that was in the Tom Cruise movie, the building and all that? That was pretty cool. We did that in Berlin. Yeah, it was where the movie at the end, where they all get killed and all that. It's pretty crazy.
Right. No, we did all that. It was. Yeah. And even, you know, more than that, I mean, you're a huge U2 fan. He showed us like where they got all the Skodas for the Zooropa whatever it was.
Wow. It's a really deep tour.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, in Vegas last week, I could see into your living room from my hotel room.
I'm going back on Monday. Going back on Monday.
Back to see U2.
Yep.
A movie of the concert.
I may need an intervention. Okay. Just, yeah.
Well, I am leaving tomorrow for Europe.
Yeah.
We're going to do some job shadowing and helping out at the event. And I'm also going to take a little bit of time to go down to Winchester and see where the supposed Knights of the Round Table or King Arthur's Round Table is. And, and then on the way back, I'm stopping in Iceland because it's cheaper to fly from London to Reykjavik and then Reykjavik to Pittsburgh if you stay for 2 days. So my wife was able to save us $1,000, but we got to spend it on hotel rooms in Reykjavik.
Yeah, that should be awesome. Now I'm looking forward to hearing about it. And also, too, Davey, if it didn't get any weirder having David Luongo come on our live show that you brought him to in Indianapolis, you know, the in front. Lewis Phillips and I are actually doing – we talked to David at Majora when we went earlier this year, and we are doing a live pitch show at This Nations in Matterley. They're letting me get up there and do a live podcast show. So the circle of life is complete here with in front and David Luongo. It's awesome.
So you're going to do a live show in front of David Luongo and 15,000 drunk and confused British men.
Yes. Yeah, should be great. No, David.
The English should be warned.
Yeah. Well, I have one with me up on stage in Lewis. He can speak their language. So, awesome. Well, great. Thanks for this walk down memory lane. You've been to so many of these great races, and you're going to another one next week. So I appreciate the reminiscing about Team USA wins and losses and tracks and venues and all of that here on the Fly Racing Racer X podcast. Thanks, DC.
Hey, thanks. Go Team USA and good luck, Canada.
Thanks. See ya.
This has been the Fly Racing Steve Mathis Show, presented by Maxxis Tires, Renthal, Motorsport.com, and Kuba Links on RacerXOnline.com. Thanks for listening and supporting our partners. Don't change the air. Don't change the air.